This is Joe Burns.
And Chad P.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Rock School Podcast.
We think you'll learn something.
Now remember, if you want to hear the show with all the music in place, go to KSLU.org and stream the show live, Thursdays at 5.
And Sundays at 4.
It's a new show every week.
Now enjoy this week's Rock School Radio Show.
Portions of the day's programming are reproduced by means of electrical transcriptions or tape recordings.
Time for school, Rock School, with your hosts, Dr. Joe Burns and Chad P.
First place.
I wonder what made them go from second to first place.
You stopped eating on the air.
Oh, you think that's what it was?
Yes, it was.
Speaking of eating, I wonder if the Podunk radio station will get us a cake.
Oh, I hope so. At least, I think Todd, our manager, should at least run out and get us something out of the vending machine.
Yeah,
so,
man.
I also, just remember, being an award-winning radio show, we do a ton of show prep. This is the first place award-winning Rock School radio show. My name is Joe Burns, a professor here at Southeastern Louisiana University. I'll explain my statement in a minute. Sitting to my immediate left, go ahead. What's your name there, award-winning radio disc jockey announcer type?
I will now be known as the award-winning Chad P.
That's right. If you've been following this show for any length of time, God bless you, number one. Number two, you probably have learned that we have taken second place in the International Communicator Award category. It's a major radio award, and it's one you really want to win if you're in the world of radio.
We won second place so many times.
We just stopped announcing it.
We just started applying for second place.
Right. We've said the heck with it. We don't even tell you about it anymore. Well, we applied for it again. We put in our 9/11 show. If you remember, last September 11th, we did a 10th anniversary 9/11 show.
Mm-hmm.
We entered it in. Guess what?
We took first place!
We did. We won the whole thing. We won the whole thing. We won the little gold-plated statue that they give out. We could have gotten a silver-plated statue, but you know, we just said, eh. But now, first place.
I wonder what made them go from second to first place.
You stopped eating on the air.
Oh, you think that's what it was?
Yes, it was.
Speaking of eating, I wonder if the Podunk radio station will get us a cake.
Oh, I hope so. At least, I think Todd, our manager, should at least run out and get us something out of the vending machine.
Yeah,
so,
man.
I also, just remember, being an award-winning radio show, we do a ton of show prep. About 9 seconds before air, you looked at me and said, what are we talking about?
What are we
this
talking
week?
About again?
Professional, professionally done.
You know it. Congrats, Doc.
You too. Congratulations. So that's it. That's enough self-patting on the back. Let's do a radio show. However, we will probably say it two or three more times during the show.
I'm really glad that we're talking today about what we're talking about, because when this event actually happened, we were right in the middle of the Rock School Roundtable.
Couldn't do it.
And I remember I came to you and said, we got to talk about this.
Right.
Do we break into the roundtable shows and do it, or do we pay homage? So it may seem a little dated, but it's definitely still appropriate.
Oh, I agree. I agree. Dick Clark. Richard Wagstaff Clark is his real name. Born November 30th, 1929. Died April 18th, 2012. Now we found out due to complications from a stroke.
Mm-hmm.
That's what actually killed him. Literally America's oldest teenager right up until the end. I watched him on Dick Clark's Rockin' Eve because I'm old and do not go out for New Year's Eve.
Age has nothing to do with it, man. My wife's favorite New Year's Eve activity
Dick Clark's
is
Rockin'
to
Eve.
Watch Dick Clark.
Well, if you think the whole show is going to be about American Bandstand or Pyramid, something like that, blooper show. It's not. I'm going to talk about American Bandstand, but I want to take you back to 1959, 1960 to something called the Payola scandal first. I'm going to talk about that, then we'll get into American Bandstand. But I got to play something. When I was looking online for information about Dick Clark, Bandstand is what came out of the radio,
obviously.
And a piece of trivia kept jumping up again and again and again. Bandstand had everybody lip sync, right?
Well, yeah.
Well, what happened was a piece of trivia kept popping up. B.B. King was the only guy that didn't lip sync on American Bandstand. B.B. King was the only guy that didn't lip sync on Bandstand. B.B. King, B.B. King, B.B. King, B.B. King. Really? Is that the truth? Untrue.
Oh, really?
On March 18th, 1958, Jerry Lee Lewis played Bandstand, and guess what? He didn't lip sync either. Really? Prove it. okay, here's Jerry Lee Lewis, Great Balls of Fire, live on American Bandstand. We'll come back and talk payola in just a minute. Rock School.
That's right, Miss Becker, Great Balls of Fire. You take my nerves and you rattle my brain. Too much love drives a man insane.
I should probably apologize for the quality of that recording. It's what award-winning radio shows do. It's basically a little more than a kinetoscope recording of that because it's so early.
Well, it was live, and it was back in what?
58.
58. 58. See, we're not even talking about the 60s yet.
Let's talk about Dick Clark and something called payola.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we've mentioned it on this radio station before, but we've never gotten into the payola hearings of 1959, 1960. However, when you think Dick Clark, you think American Bandstand, like I said before, the blooper show, Pyramid, uh-huh. Rockin' Eve, which he came up with.
Yep.
And I didn't want to do that. I'm going to talk Bandstand, but I wanted to throw something in that people may not have heard about.
We think about it because
we
it's
do.
Something that we deal with.
It's in our business.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Payola, or how it was originally called, plugola, is the basically smashing together a portmanteau of two words, pay, as in to give money, mm-hmm. and the word Victrola, which was an old record player, which you'd crank on the side and then put down the needle, and as long as the crank held pressure against a spring, mm-hmm. the turntable turned.
Yep.
So payola or plugola. Plug was used because when you got a 45, you were supposed to plug a specific side, plug it on the air,
yeah,
talk about it.
Right.
So they called it a plugola or a payola.
Cool.
Payola is the version that kept going. That's what it's called today. Well, in 1959, or before 1959, it was legal to do this. You could pay jocks to do this,
mm-hmm.
as long as the jocks paid taxes on the gifts that they received. Jocks weren't paid tremendous amounts of money,
right?
So they were allowed to do this.
So basically, if I were producing you as a musical artist,
right,
I could go down to the local radio station,
pay,
slip the guy a $20 bill,
mm-hmm.
and say, please give us a couple of spins today.
You got it.
And
exactly
it,
that.
As long as he
it
did
could be
it legally.
Done with, it could be done with money. It could uh-huh. be done with gifts. In the case of one of my favorite early disc jockeys, Alan Freed, he actually got his name on labels as the author of the song. Remember Maybelline by Chuck Berry?
I do.
There's an old collector's item. If you can get a Maybelline that doesn't have just Berry's name on it,
uh-huh.
it'll also have the name Freed on it. And Freed got writing credit royalties. Now, that wasn't quite legal, but to just give him money to play it, yeah, you could do that as long as he paid taxes
right.
on it. Well, the government got all upset in 1959 and decided to go into looking to payola. Why? Well, some people say it's because of the 1950s quiz show scandals. The United States public was looking at it as not quite fair.
Mm-hmm.
The playing field wasn't fair. Others say it was because major record labels were upset that little independent upstarts were spending money,
mm-hmm.
and you're biting into us. Some people say there was a racial aspect to it. You can't have these African American labels, you know, attacking the predominantly white labels.
Right.
And why it actually happened is one of these convoluted things, but it happened. Who was the major name in making music acts at the time? Dick Clark.
He was.
Sure, he was the guy on Bandstand, and he was brought before the group, brought before the House panel.
So they basically started looking into this area.
Right.
And they said, who's the top dog right now doing
right.
all this?
Oh, Dick Clark.
Come on over here.
That's right. And Dick Clark was brought in, and he, you know, clean cut, the whole schmeal, didn't look like your average disc jockey.
Right.
And he was brought in because of his relationship with not only American Bandstand, but something called Jamie Records.
Okay.
We'll talk about Jamie Records in just a minute. But understand that Jamie Records had two artists you should know. One, Duane Eddy, mm-hmm. bet you know him, from Rebel Rouser. And the other one is called Jordan Brothers.
Mm-hmm.
Who are the Jordan Brothers? Well, I'll bet you know one of their songs. Gimme Some Lovin'. Oh, no, that's a Spencer Davis group. Oh, here you go. Here's the Jordan Brothers and Gimme Some Lovin'. Rock School.
Give me some love.
This is Rock School as we talk about Dick Clark. A quick goodbye to Dick Clark and a thank you to him. We're back in 1960 now. However, not talking about Bandstand, but rather Dick Clark and the payola scandals that the House brought against the world of music. In 1960, Dick Clark's 30 years old, and he is, you know, a part owner in Jamie Records, but of course it's American Bandstand that they're interested in. The House committee brought two charges against him. One, payola. And two, insider trading in the music business. The payola was because apparently Clark received some gifts, and the big ones they were interested in was a mink stole and a ring, which Dick Clark very quickly dismissed by stating, yes, I received those, but I never wore them.
But again, we were just talking about the fact that you could do it.
You could,
at one point.
It's one of those things, that the impression of impropriety.
I understand that, but I mean, unless they sent out some nationwide memo that said all of a sudden, you need to stop doing this,
right,
and he was made aware of it. It's like saying all of a sudden it's illegal to drive on the right side of the street. Oh, I'm going to go ahead and grab you for driving on the right side of the street. It just doesn't seem right.
You got it. And Mitt Romney's money was all made legal. But
you get what I mean.
Look bad.
You know?
I'm with you. It's the insider trading that in music that really got him in trouble. Jamie Records, of which he was a 25% owner, was a Philadelphia record company, which I said had Duane Eddy and these Jordan brothers. The thing was, the committee had people look at American Bandstand, and it seemed that Dick Clark had the people who were on Jamie Records on American Bandstand more than other artists. And that got them a little upset as well.
All right. I
mean, furthermore, Dick Clark had something called Dick Clark's Caravan of Stars.
Okay.
And Dick Clark's Caravan of Stars was this touring group that went around the United States and Canada, backed up by Lloyd Price's backup group, a 17-piece orchestra. Lloyd Price, he's a singer out of New Orleans.
Right.
He went around with Chubby Checker, Duane Eddy, Bobby Darin, Fabian, Buddy Holly, Annette Funicello, and Bo Diddley. These people went around. When the committee looked at American Bandstand, guess which artists seemed to show up on American Bandstand a whole lot more pitching this caravan thing.
All right,
and this upset the committee.
I realize that, and I can see where it looks a little fishy. But did Dick Clark outright own American Bandstand?
No, he was one of the producers in ABC.
All right, then there were some people above him that could have said, "Hey, your people are getting a little too much airtime."
I get that,
but they didn't.
I get that. However, the House also showed that Dick Clark owned 25% for only a $125 investment, and in 1 year had a return of over $31,000. Now, remember, this is 1960.
It's a good investment.
Yeah, that it is.
Don't prosecute him for being smart.
I'll tell you what. Let's play one from the Caravan of Stars. We'll come back and tell you how it all came out. Here's Bo Diddley. Who Do You Love? Rock School. Time for the first break here on Rock School. Let me tell you how it all came out. Obviously, Dick Clark was not destroyed by this committee, this payola committee. However, some disc jockeys were, none worse than Alan Freed.
Mm-hmm.
Alan Freed basically looked at the committee and said, go pound sand.
Right,
I haven't done anything wrong.
I'm done, yeah.
Right, and they just killed him.
Yeah.
No, they would have done no worse had they literally taken him out in front of Congress and killed him.
It just seems so tedious, though, because I realize that it's 1960. Don't you have anything better to do than to go around persecuting radio disc jockeys?
I agree, but it's the concept of we are the people of Congress. We need to look good in front of constituents. And for some reason, the constituency wanted this attacked now. I don't understand it. You know, you look at the legislature in Louisiana, and they're working on all these big things, and then all of a sudden, we have a state rodent. I'm sorry, what?
Yeah.
You know, all of a sudden we have a state cherry pie.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, what?
Yeah.
You know, this is what some constituency wanted this, and here it is. So what happened with Dick Clark? Well, he stood up to the committee to the point where he agreed to not carry on with certain practices, paid a small fine, and through ABC said to him, look, you can either give up your relationship with Jamie Records,
mm-hmm,
or you can give up American Bandstand.
Duh.
Well, which would you have done? you know, goodbye Jamie
Records.
Goodbye
Jamie Records,
sure.
Yeah.
And that's what he did. In fact, he gave up all contact with record production, mm-hmm. with the concept of R&D-ing musicians, research and developing of musicians, and stayed just with American Bandstand because at the time, American Bandstand was not only winning its slot,
yeah.
it had made ABC one of the most powerful television stations in the entire afternoon area.
Right. Don't I remember a trivial fact that they gave him like 6 weeks? They gave him 6 weeks to make it work, and within 3 to 4 weeks, it became number one.
Oh, sure. It took over immediately.
Yeah.
It was, we did Don Cornelius earlier this year, and uh-huh. it was one of those where the guys basically gave him no chance of succeeding whatsoever,
and
out of the gate, pow,
yeah,
it hit.
Skyrocketed.
Sure. There was nobody serving this young teen and housewife demographic.
Mm-hmm.
A little known fact of Bandstand, they tried to do two a week. The second one, ABC, stuck at 7 o'clock at night. And Dick Clark said, this is silly. People are being served at 7 o'clock at night.
Right.
There are television shows that people want to see.
Yeah.
And it failed miserably. And mm-hmm. it's one of those where Clark sort of sat with his arms crossed. Told you. Told you. So he had to give up all of his money in Jamie Records. And the testimony ended with one of the members of the committee looking at Dick Clark and saying, why don't you play more established artists like Sinatra, Bing Crosby, or Perry Como? And Dick Clark looked at him and said, because none of the young people in the audience care to listen to any of them.
He knew.
I'm sorry, sir, you're too old.
Yeah, I mean, he knew. And, you know, and he had the open mind enough. You might think, why did he go ahead and give up Jamie Records? Because of the great return on investment he got. Because he saw the potential and he knew.
Right.
He knew the potential that he had.
I could do more here.
Exactly.
Sure. At the end of it, the head of it all, Representative Orrin Harris, gave him a full pass. He walked away scot-free and became the Dick Clark that we know today. But right there in 1960, had they wanted the House committee, much the same way they did the other disc jockeys, they could have destroyed him, but they didn't. So that was a turning point for Dick Clark. Hello, KLSU. Thanks for running the radio show, the award-winning radio show.
Hello, KSCL in Shreveport, Louisiana, where they play winners.
That's right. Thus, us. Join us on Facebook. I have to change the name of it to the award-winning. Am I going to just drive this into the dirt the whole way through the show?
It's already driven.
I know. Join us by searching Rock School Radio Show and like us. You really like us. Back in a minute, and we will talk Bandstand on Rock School. This is Rock School as we talk about Dick Clark. A little quick goodbye to him. Born November 30th, 1929. Died not too long ago, April 18th, 2012. Many people are of the opinion that Dick Clark was the idea for Bandstand. It was Dick Clark's idea, Dick Clark came up with it, and all of that. Not so. It was in 1952 that Clark moves to Philadelphia and works at WFIL, taking on the handle Dick Clark.
Mm-hmm.
Before that, he was Richard Clark.
Yeah.
Okay, because he worked in the world of radio. His father was in the world of broadcasting, so he had an in. Okay, this kid didn't come up out of destitution. He was in the area. WFIL had a television station with the same calls and as the radio station, and they had a television show called Bob Horn's Bandstand.
Mm-hmm.
Bob Horn was already on there doing basically what Bandstand was. When Bob Horn was on vacation, they let Dick Clark fill in for him.
Cool.
Okay. Horn was the guy that actually set the basic format for the show. Live dancers while records played and studio guests, things like that.
Sure.
So if you want to figure out who actually invented Bandstand, it's this guy named Bob Horn. Clark becomes the full-time guest host, or the full-time host, I guess, in 1956 when Horn is convicted of drunk driving.
Uh-oh.
And a few other nasty little charges. He's tried to date some of the kids that were dancing. So the television station told him, get lost. And Dick Clark takes over.
Hopefully we won't hear about some conspiracy where Dick Clark was spiking his punch.
And... No, not at all. Horn changes his name to Bob Adams and goes on to be a rather popular DJ, dying in 1966.
Yeah.
But it's because Horn screws up.
Yeah.
And drinks too much and tries to date some of the kids that are on the show,
right.
That Dick Clark actually gets it. Again, the Paola hearings could have nailed him,
mm-hmm.
and Bob Horn being a nice guy could have nailed him.
Mm-hmm.
But we're going to talk more Bandstand, but quick trivia question.
Yo.
What act appeared the most times on American Bandstand? Take this one to the bank. Freddie Boom Boom Cannon.
Well, you didn't even give me a chance to answer.
Okay, I'll do it again. What act appeared the most times on American Bandstand? We win awards for this crud, I got to tell you. Do it.
What's those boom boom guys?
Freddie Boom Boom Cannon.
That's the one.
Let's go to Palisades Park.
Hey,
Rock School. Okay, just enough time before the bottom of the hour to do a real quick story and a real quick song. Dick Clark, as the host of American Bandstand, was so well respected by those who not only were at ABC, but the artists who came on the show, mm-hmm. that he could make suggestions about their music, say, you should sing this kind of song, and they would listen to him. You're familiar with Chubby Checker?
Of course.
Okay. Well, Chubby Checker was kind of a mensa guy before The Twist came out.
Yeah.
Dig this.
Okay.
August 6th, 1960.
Yeah.
A couple people, Hank Ballard and the Midnighters, don't come. They're supposed to show up and sing The Twist, right?
Right.
They're supposed to sing.
Okay.
They don't show up. Well, this leaves a giant gaping hole in the American Bandstand run.
Yeah, because we're live.
Yeah, what are we going to do?
We got to fill, what, about 5 to 6 minutes?
Right. So what Dick Clark does is he calls a friend of his by the name of Chubby Checker.
Hey, Chubbs.
And he says,
how you doing?
I don't think that's quite the way the conversation went, but let's pretend it does.
Okay.
Hey, Chubbs, you should go into the studio and you should quickly do a sound-alike version. Records it in an hour and a half to fill this time hole.
Seriously?
I kid you not.
Mm.
The thing becomes an instant number one hit and sends off a dance craze that's going to last the better part of 2 years. Why? Because Dick Clark says, I got to fill 5 minutes. Hey, Chubbs, you know, to use your words. Hey, Chubbs, would you mind recording this? Kaboom.
So what did Hank do?
Not that. Rock School.
Come on, baby.
Bottom of the hour here on Rock School as we were twisting away in the studio. My name is Joe Burns.
Oh, I'm sorry. I am the award-winning Chad P.
What were you doing?
Always on time. Yeah. Basking in my own glory.
Of winning the award, right?
Yes, sir.
I'm in a conundrum here, man. I got to make a decision, and
what's
I haven't
that?
Made it yet.
What
do you realize we have the ability to play Barry Manilow today?
We have the ability to play Barry Manilow any day.
We
use our own sound judgment not to.
But today specifically, the American Bandstand theme is sung by Mr. Barry Manilow.
Yeah. I got a coin in my pocket. We can let fate decide.
Well, we may just do that. May end the show on that. Would they take the award back if
they might.
We played Barry
Manilow?
Yeah,
they might repo it.
Let's do 7 days and 70 seconds. Take a break from Dick Clark. This is April 30th through May 6th. I think we have Monday with Chad. Go.
April 30th in 1992, Madonna's Bustier is ripped off from Fredericks of Hollywood, and a reward of 10,000 G's is offered for its return.
Are you serious?
Yes, sir.
You said that her Bustier is ripped off. I like your word choice. I like that a lot.
I'm an award winner.
May 1st, 1980, the South African government bans the song Another Brick in the Wall by Floyd after children in the country adopt it as a protest song against their terrible education system.
May 2nd, 2007, 1,876 guitarists assemble in the city of Wrocław, Poland. They're going to break the Guinness World Record for most guitarists playing at one time. The group broke into Hey Joe by Jimi Hendrix for the assembled crowd and the Guinness officials.
May 3rd, 2004, the U.S. Supreme Court finally and completely reject a suit by bassist Robert Daisley and drummer Lee Kearslake that they were owed royalties for their performances on Ozzy Osbourne's albums Blizzard of Oz and Diary of a Madman.
May 4th, 2008, thieves break into the house of Martha Reeves and they steal over $1 million worth of awards and recording equipment. The next day, they got caught trying to pawn it off for a measly $400.
What a couple of idiots.
Stupid.
You gotta be kidding me. May 5th, 1986, it was officially announced that Cleveland, Ohio would become the location for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame building. May 6, 1994, this will wrap us up. Pearl Jam files a complaint with the U.S. Justice Department against Ticketmaster, claiming they were a monopoly in the concert ticket business. Okay, now we came into this break with the idea of Chubby Checker redoing the twist. Here's another Dick Clark statement that kicks off the career, if you will. I mean, the first major hit of a band. Do you know the song At the Hop? Danny and the Juniors.
I sure
do. You can
rock
it, you can roll it, you can stop it, you don't. Right?
At the hop, pop, bop.
Dump, right.
Bop,
it was initially called Do the Bop.
Do the Bop.
Yeah, that doesn't fly as much. Well, before they come on the show, they gave the song over to Dick Clark, and Dick Clark went, well, that's okay, but you guys should really change the name of it to At the Hop. Clouds part, single beam of light, D minor chord on the organ. So really, one statement by Dick Clark takes Danny and the Juniors and whoo, shoots him into the stratosphere.
You know, if Dick Clark had a serious sense of humor, which I'm sure he did, he could have just had some fun. Be like, well, you know what would really get the crowd going is you should cluck like a chicken
right
before you kick off the band.
Let's call it Litter Box Jump.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he didn't.
There you go.
It. Danny and the Juniors at the Hop. Rock School. Talking bandstand here on Rock School as we talk about the life of Richard Wagstaff Clark, otherwise known as Dick Clark. Now, do you even remember watching Bandstand? You're a lot younger than I am. Did you watch American Bandstand?
No, I never got to watch it, but I'm
I bet
very,
your sister did.
I'm
She's much older than you are.
I'm very familiar with it, yeah.
Yeah. Have you ever heard the phrase, it's got a good beat, you can dance to it?
Absolutely, I have.
Sure. That came from American Bandstand. The section that it came from was called the Rata Record.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's a neat little trivia question to get across to people. Most people can who are Bandstand fans can probably come up with the concept of what's it called? Rata Record. This is where they may get tripped up. Ask them the numeric chart. You could rate the record if you rated it at its lowest point, the lowest number you could give it, or its highest number. What could you give it? The lowest number was 35.
Mm-hmm.
The highest number was 98. And it was always that two people came up. They pulled two of the dancers off the floor, had them listen to a clip from a song, and then they would rate the song between 35 and 98.
Why didn't it just go 1 to 10?
You're right. That's the question. Why 35 to 98? When questioned on it, Dick Clark says, because I pick the music and I would never pick a song that on a scale of 1 to 100 could be rated lower than 35, because that would be just an insult to the song. And I would never pick a song that could be given a 100, because that would be a perfect song and there's no such thing as a perfect song.
Wow.
So what Dick Clark would do is have them both rate it and then he would average the scores and that would be the score for the song. Where did this silly line, it's got a good beat, you can dance to it, come from? What he would do is after the kids would rate it, he would stick a microphone in their face on a national audience. And there's nothing more frightening to a lot of people than microphones. Not to you and me. We live for them. But some people, you stick a microphone in their face and they go, You put the microphone in their face and they say, what do you think of the song? How many times was it said, it's got a good beat? And the other person said, you can dance to it. That's where it comes from.
Cool.
The response to rate a record. So that's where it actually comes from.
I love the fact that he came up with all these little, well, I did this because of this and I did this because of this, as if it was just logic.
He had the Spotlight Dance. He also had the American Bandstand Top 10, or what they call the AB10, which was just the top 10 songs of the week. And he played two or three songs off of that. And you watched kids dance. He had the Bandstand Stroll, which was the same thing that was on Don Cornelius's. Would you line the kids up on both sides and down they came. So the Doors. How many times have you heard about the Doors on Ed Sullivan, where the out came, you know, Morrison and girl, we couldn't get much higher. He said exactly what Sullivan told him not to say.
Right.
Well, forget Ed Sullivan. Who brought the Doors to national prominence first?
Richard.
You got it. Dick Clark did it. The Ed Sullivan Show occurred 8/25/1967. The Doors went on American Bandstand 7/22/1967. Beat him by a month. What'd they play? Well, Light My Fire, of course. Sounded like this. High school.
You know that it would be untrue. You know that I would be a liar if I was to say to you. Girl, we fire!
Fire! This is Rock School doing the, at least a nice tip of the hat to Dick Clark, who passed away April 18th, 2012. We're a little late.
That's okay. We had to, though.
We were doing the Rock School Roundtable the last 2 weeks, so we had to push it off just a little bit.
We were doing something that he inspired.
Yes, that's right.
There you go.
Just like Dick Clark would have done it. Bandstand was picked up by ABC, becoming American Bandstand, August 5th, 1957. Now, if you know anything about the timeline of television, color is not really going to come to prominence in terms of television till the 1960s.
Mm-hmm.
Everything's in black and white.
Yeah.
Okay. Dick Clark and the area that he's in, Philadelphia, is a pioneer in the world of television. So what Dick Clark actually does is try to take the show, even before it moves to Los Angeles, while it's still based in Philadelphia, tries to take the show to color. Dick Clark's American Bandstand, or just Bandstand, before it goes to, before it even goes to Los Angeles, becomes one of the very first shows to be shot in color. Totally revolutionary at the time. The funny thing is, most people couldn't even receive it.
Yeah.
They didn't have a color television. But those that could, it was amazing. But the idea was scrapped almost immediately. Why? A black and white television camera is only so large.
Mm-hmm.
A television camera at the time that was in color was about 2.5 times its size. And because of it being 2.5 times its size, the head of the camera, it had to be on a pedestal that was again 2.5 times its size, or it would tip over.
You just didn't have the studio space.
You got it. They were out of what was known as Studio B at the time, which was only so large. And if you have these two cameras, you could only have two cameras at the time because they were color. You didn't get a good look at the kids who were dancing.
Right.
So after two or three shows, the idea was scrapped, and they went back to three or four black and white cameras, and you got a better look at the kids dancing.
Sure.
But for that short little blip of time, Bandstand, not American, it hadn't gone to ABC yet, but just straight Bandstand, was one of the first television shows to be broadcast in color. And by the way, we broadcast in color, too.
That's right.
If you look right at the radio, you can see it. Yeah.
Hello,
Radio Universidad, Salamanca, Spain. We're not in broadcasting color across the ocean just yet, are we? Are we in color in Spain?
No, not yet.
No, not just yet.
Hello, WBSD in Burlington, Wisconsin. Thank you for not dropping us.
We win awards for this stuff. Back in a minute. Rock School. All right, coming out of the second break, Chad, we're really only going to be able to play two more songs.
You're sweating.
I know. We're going to have to make a decision.
That's all you. You already know my stand.
Two songs away. We may have to play.
We only played him once on this show, and it was a joke.
Bandstand
we
Boogie.
We played it
by
as a joke.
Barry Manilow. Mm-hmm. We may end the show with it.
Hey, that's all you.
We're talking about Bandstand, man.
That's all you. It was your first concert. You make the decision.
September 14th, 1987, although on its last legs, Bandstand becomes the longest-running entertainment show in American history. And then April 8th, 1989, Dick Clark refuses to trim the show from its hour-long format to a half an hour, and he is canned. They tell him to get lost, and the show is moved over to the USA Network, and they give it over to a brand new guy called David Hirsch.
Mm-hmm.
David Hirsch, ladies and gentlemen. The amazing David Hirsch, ladies and gentlemen. Ever heard of him, David Hirsch?
Nope.
Yeah, most people didn't either, because they sent it over to USA on April and on October 7th. Guess what?
Done.
Gone. Yeah, you needed Dick Clark. You needed Dick Clark. In 1974, everybody knows the Bandstand theme song.
Mm-hmm.
What they did was come up with a second theme at the mid-show break. Just basically to say, we're halfway done. They started, 74, disco.
Yeah.
They started to use a halfway break. Who was the biggest guy out there in 1974 that wasn't a Bee Gee?
Oh, I was about to say.
No.
Oh, you had
wasn't
me.
A Bee Gee. Well, they needed an instrumental, and the Bee Gees were singers.
Yeah.
The biggest instrumentalist out at that point in time was Billy Preston.
Okay.
And they used his song, Space Race, to basically tip the audience, halfway done, enjoy the rest of the show. It sounded like this. Rock School. All right, last break here on Rock School as we talk about Dick Clark and a decision has to be made. decision must be made.
I'm like Pontius Pilate P. I have washed my hands of this.
All right, very good. Which still means you have the ability to kill me. Okay. I have here two more little pieces of trivia about Dick Clark before we say goodbye. Only once did Dick Clark have a co-host. It was Donna Summer.
Mm-hmm.
ABC talked him into helping her pitch the opening of her movie, Thank God It's Friday. And also the announcer voice of American Bandstand was Charlie O'Donnell. Charlie O'Donnell? Anybody? Anybody? You ever watched Wheel of Fortune?
Mm-hmm.
That's him. That's him.
Pat Sajak and Vanna White.
That's the guy who was the American Bandstand voice as well.
Roddy was the man.
I think so, too.
Oh,
especially because his jackets shined so loudly. Okay. We're at the end.
I'm done.
We have to... goodbye, Dick Clark, by the way. Thank you. R.I.P.
Thank you, sir.
Appreciate all that you did. America's oldest teenager. We can either finish with Bandstand Boogie by Barry Manilow or... The last song ever played on American Bandstand was Laura Branigan's Shattered Glass. Huh? Which one? Go ahead.
Barry.
Really?
Go ahead. Why not?
Really?
We win awards for this crap. Come
we do.
On.
Here's Barry Manilow. It's the Bandstand Boogie. You have to do it. Come on. It's Dick Clark. Get angry if you want, but here it is. Class is so dismissed.
We're going hopping, hop. We're going hopping today. Where things are popping, pop. The Philadelphia way. We're going to drop it, drop. On all the music they play on the Bandstand.